My guest this morning will be known to many North Coast residents. I most often hear him referred to as this guy named Serge, and with that noticeable awe and wonder in their voices, I know they are referring to Serge Benhayan. I call Serge an energy healer, but I'm looking forward to visiting with him this morning to hear in his own words how he describes the work he does. I suspect that some of the information that may come through in this interview will sound pretty far out, even for those of us living here in a relatively enlightened community. So before we take up a position in the cosmos, I'd like to also identify Serge as the guy next door. When I met Serge 6 years ago, he was a husband, father of 4 young children, a tennis coach, living in the suburbs of Austinville and starting to work from home with Key Force Healing Energy. Today, Serge is still a father of 4 and still loves tennis, although there's little time for coaching. His healing work has grown astronomically. He travels to other countries several times a year to deliver healings and teachings. And when he is home in the Northern Rivers, he now works from his clinic in Ganelaba. And you may have to wait several weeks to get an appointment. So let me assure you, this interview is not about drumming up business for Serge, because, well, he's in a position that people just mysteriously find him when they're ready to receive the healing he offers. Good morning, Serge.
Good morning, Gail.
Welcome to Bay FM. This is your first time here.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't invited me before.
Well, I'm not on air very often, or you would have been here sooner. Now, as I mentioned, I must often refer to you as an energy healer. If you meet people in a social setting and they give you that standard, what do you do, line? What do you say?
First and foremost, I assess the situation and also the person asking the question, of course. Energy healing is something that is done, and it's part of a process, but not anyone can actually claim to be an energy healer as such. The perfect scenario for energy healing is to provide a space for the person's body to respond and begin the healing process themselves. There is different ways of doing that, and there are many techniques, but in truth, a person is really and always healing themselves.
And just with that mention of setting up a space for people to receive, what I'd like to do this morning, the thought of trying to condense your work into a short 1 hour interview has been somewhat daunting, but my intention in inviting you into the program today is to deliver a message to the listeners that will benefit them in their day-to-day living. So my intention is that we create a space that will allow people to receive what is being offered. One time you said to me, it's not about looking for things, it's not about finding things, it's about receiving. So with that intention this morning, that people can receive in this space, my personal experience has been that with this kind of healing, I don't always feel something specific or dramatic straight away. It's an unfolding that starts to happen once I agree to receive the healing. So be it for our listeners today. Now, how is it that a tennis coach in Sydney ends up being an energetic healer here in the Northern Rivers?
Well, in truth, and with the benefit of hindsight, everybody is already energy healing, because everything is energy, and we give off energy in everything that we do. I wish I'd have known this when I first started coaching, although we had a lot of integrity in what we did. Tennis coaching was always a medium that I used to build character or allow an artistic expression, and that was what we targeted tennis coaching for. When we came up here and semi-retired, so-called, I started opening up to energy and energy healing as a client, and then got interested in doing it as a practitioner. Lots of things happened which led to some amazing occurrences at the age of 35, which allowed me to then begin my own process.
Now, I'm aware that your work is not bound by time and space. That's one reason we're able to set this up on broadcast today and reach out to the people. And it's possible for you to deliver healing to individuals anywhere on the planet. Time and space just are not a factor. How does this work?
It works on the premise that through the fluidic flow that's in our lymphatic system and also the impulses of our connective tissue, we are actually all connected. One day it will be discovered that that's actually where consciousness lies and exists and emanates from. So, for example, if you are in a stillness place within yourself and you can connect to someone just by mentioning their first name, your nervous system and their nervous system are one and are connected, which is the true meaning of intuition, which is the science of the interconnectedness. So if I hold someone in my stillness, just by mentioning their name, no matter where it's from, they will receive the quality of my energetic integrity at that time. That provides them with the space in which to perform their own healing. And that's in effect how a distant healing occurs. And I've been doing them, as you know, for a long time all over the world.
Yes, I have living proof of people on the other side who had agreed to receive a healing from you, didn't know anything about the time or what would happen, and then next when I spoke with them and they identified when they did feel a shift, it coincided with what was happening thousands of kilometers away. So acknowledging that this work doesn't have that time-space limitation, are there benefits for you and your clients in working face-to-face, hands-on?
The benefit of having someone physically there is actually the verbal communication where you can talk to someone about the problem and have them arise that problem specifically when they communicate the actual problem or the situation, illness or disease that is at hand. Other than that, there isn't a greater benefit in the in the physical contact other than the human touch, of course. It is always about providing the right space for the person to heal themselves. And I use the word healer very, very loosely because I know that I'm not, even though I'm part of the healing process.
Can you give us a couple of examples? And I'm kind of thinking maybe if you could give us extremes. Well, just so that we get the breadth of the kinds of things that you heal. Well, first of all, let me clarify. Are you working on the physical body, the emotional body, the ethereal body? Where is the work, the energy that you're bringing in? Which is it targeting, or is it all of them?
It targets all of them at the same time. The healing itself is called esoteric healing. Esoteric just means innermost. So our aim is to connect to the stillness within the body of the recipient, whether they are in person or afar, and from there build up towards where the disharmony is most in the body. So, for example, if they have a tumor somewhere in their body, that's the focal point of the most disharmonious point in their body. We don't go to the tumor because that's already the problem. So what we do is we start with the bottommost or the innermost deviation from that disharmony, which is our stillness, and then we work towards that point, which is what the client has usually come in with.
So some examples then of people who may come for this type of healing are people who are physically in distress. They have tumors. Identify, can you, a couple of other examples of why people may come?
I've been fortunate on one level to have recommendations from all walks of life and varied conditions. I get some of the most horrific cases, some unresolved cases, some terminal cases to, you know, some of the most basic cases as frozen shoulders or sprained ankles or relationship problems and so forth. In each case, it's still all about stillness and harmony, no matter how you treat it. And I treat, you know, from the most terminal case to a sprained ankle as the same, because for that person, it's actually all the same thing.
Now, you're doing workshops the last couple of years. Those have been, increasing as your whole practice has been. So your workshops are about teaching people how to receive this energy, and are they also receiving a healing while they're in your workshop?
That's correct. The first and foremost way to present a healing is to create energetic integrity, and that always comes from the presenter and anyone else who's facilitating. Secondly, the manner in which to hold that energetic integrity is to let the people know who are there, why they're there, and in the type of condition they are meant to be there. In other words, with their integrity. We run a number of workshops. The healing ones are around teaching people how to become energy healers or esoteric healers at home, not really aimed at making them practitioners, although some may do and do. But predominantly to bring healing to every household in the world, because that's what we need to do. Our most common denominator is the fact that we can heal and everybody can heal. The other workshops are around bringing back man and women to their most essential way of being, which is harmony and stillness.
So I might just give the listeners a little clue that you have a website and that your work is broadly covered under the term universal medicine. So if you'd like to find out more about the workshops, probably the best thing is to go to the website and get on the mailing list there. It's www.universalmedicine.com.au. One of the things, Serge, that I'm most delighted about in your workshops is that it's giving this information and these skills to people who are actually already very well known in whatever their chosen field is. And I know you are referred to as the healer's healer. And having attended some of your workshops, I often meet people there who I know to be already well on their path of their own enlightenment and their own profession, and they're incorporating these skills into it, which is such exciting work. I mean, you're doing it with other healers, but also musicians and lawyers and...
Yeah, and a lot of doctors have been coming, and physiotherapists in particular, acupuncturists. We cover a great variety of modalities, practitioners, and the average mum and dad who really need to know a little bit more about themselves and how to bring quality into their household.
Yes, and working with the children in their lives. So one of the people I know we can talk about on air by name is Chris James, who many people in Byron Bay will know as the, he's kind of our own big Buddha. Chris does the big things. And he's been working with you, or you've been working together to bring through his music, which is already divine, but with the space that you set up, it comes through in yet some elevated way.
Well, I know Chris is listening, and I don't want to make him fall off his chair.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris. But we did, we just managed to, again, just introduce to Chris a deeper level of himself. He was already creating great stuff and has been doing it for 20 years. Our role in universal medicine is to bring people to their essential self, and we do that to all. In Chris's case, he was brought to a deeper level of his own stillness. He was able to emanate from that stillness a sound that we all knew Chris had, and as many people have nominated since the release of Silk in the Clouds, a voice he was always destined to have. And so we enjoy listening to that, and it's a very, very healing process, just putting it on. Song number one, for example, helps clear your home of, stuck energy. So it's a very, very powerful song. I run that song particularly in my waiting room in the clinic. Mm. And his wife put together an om, which is, to my knowledge, the first set of oms from a lady. And we play that in the actual healing rooms, which is, of course, supportive of the work that we do.
So we have Silk in the Clouds here today, and I'd like to play a track off of that. So the music is Chris James, and Serge has written some words. They don't actually come off as lyrics on the CD, but they're within the cover. And the track we're going to play right now is called The Angel in Venice. I'm visiting with Serge Ben-Hayon. You're tuned to Bay FM. the divine Chris James from his CD called Silk in the Clouds. It's 10:24. You're tuned to Bay FM. I'm Gail Q, filling in for Nick Jeans. And this morning, my guest is Serge Ben-Hayon, an energy healer living here in the Northern Rivers. Serge, I know it's is it important, actually, I want to ask, is it important for people to understand the lineage of the work you're doing? I've known you for several years, and I've had healings, I've attended the workshops, but in a logical-minded sort of way, I don't really get it. So I just have to suspend my need to logically understand what's going on, because I now have experienced it, and I trust that it is happening without me understanding. But I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk about the lineage of the work that you're doing.
The lineage of the work commences deep in the prehistory of what we would term Egyptology, way before the pharaohs were there. It then progresses probably namely with Pythagoras. From Pythagoras we can make a great jump towards Patanjali, who delivered us the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali with Raja Yoga. From there we can make a huge leap. Leonardo da Vinci, of course, had a lot of the esoteric work in his paintings and in a lot of the messages that he gave out, even though it hasn't been revealed yet, which is unfortunate with the fame of the secret codes. They're not accurately portrayed. And then we can go from there to Helena Blavatsky, late in the 19th century, and then early in the last century with Alice A. Bailey. And this is the next round of series of planned information given out by the hierarchy.
Now, you've described truth. So this recently came through in some written email correspondence, and I just found it really useful. So I'd like to go there to this idea of living in truth, which you describe as being in alignment with the impress of our soul, that this is an ideal to live in connection with our soul, but sometimes we become disconnected. So I'd like to talk about that, when that connection is lost. I mean, I suppose not all of us are living actually in alignment with the impress of our soul, but I know many people in this area are actually striving to do that, and still we lose connection.
The key to, or the fundamental key in understanding the impress of the soul, is to first and foremost isolate yourself as a living personality in the physical sense and in the practical sense, and doing that with a lot of common sense. The next phase is to understand that within your body is a light, and a lot in Byron Bay, of course, and in this area, understand the worlds of the subtle energies. But that first layer of the inner light inside us is actually known as the human spirit. The problem is to not get associated with that inner light, because that's actually the one that gets us in trouble. After all, if you believe in reincarnation, it is the one that reincarnates, so it can't be the perfect one because we keep coming back. So the key is to go deeper than that first layer of light we call spirit, and to go much, much deeper into the impress of the soul, which is a totally different way of being, and it's a vibration much, much higher than the spirit. The problem is that we have lost energetic integrity and truth in word, and therefore the name spirit, the divine spirit, and soul have all been interconnected without real accuracy as to which one is actually referred to when we're explaining things. So the most important thing is the human spirit is the reincarnating aspect that is looking for itself through the soul, because the spirit itself is just a fragment of that soul. So the soul is love. It can be also called consciousness or Christ consciousness, which is all meaning the same thing. And the spirit is the fragment of that that has individuated itself into an isolated expression we call being human.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a fairly challenging information for a lot of people, because how I hear you saying that is that spirit is actually very connected to the egoic form, and in fact is perhaps a distraction. It's a false carrot out there for us, thinking that by being connected to our spirit is the same as being aligned with our soul impress, where what I hear you saying is that spirit is also an egoic connection.
That's correct. The before we became human beings and before we got a personality, we were light. And that what is not known is that that light wasn't itself purity, because it wouldn't have gone into form had it been pure. So we've got to go back, not only address our physical conditions, but also go back into that light that was already separated from the main light, which was the soul. So the spiritual journey sometimes often ends up in somebody chasing their own tail, because they're not realizing that they're really chasing the emanating aspect of the personality. In other words, the etheric aspect of the personality is what we call spirit.
So to some degree, if anyone's getting put off by this information, it's sort of take a deep breath. It is a semantics issue as well. And to just stay open to receiving this information to see if it comes up in the days that follow as being worthwhile for you. Now, old patterns resurface, so we make progress. We may be in alignment with our soul's impress, and then something will pull us out of that alignment. This seems to happen quite often if you're not alert.
That's correct. What we do in our workshops is we get the clients to understand themselves through the livingness of that stillness. Once they understand the impress of that stillness, it's the very first step to understanding their soul. Now, we all know we can't live in that stillness all the time, because the world today is not open to that. But once you get to know yourself in the livingness of that stillness, there is a strong pull towards that living stillness once you've identified that you're not in that stillness. Now, at first, it's very difficult to get in and hold yourself in there. But after a while, it actually gets more challenging to be out of it than actually to be in it. And that's the progress. That's the line of process that we hope to establish for the workshops.
Now, in that Living in Truth correspondence that I was referring to, it also goes on to talk about when an imposing energy gets in. I quite like this term, imposing energy. It somehow sounds more friendly than disembodied entities or other terms that may float about. But let's talk for a minute about, as long as we're talking about challenging information, what's the word on imposing energies getting in?
Okay, it's quite surprising how many people actually know about entities or imposing energies. And even health professionals, I've even talked to psychologists who understand this condition and have been able to assess the fact that there are imposing energies on types of personalities that they deal with as clients and patients. So it's a phenomena that goes back a long, long time. I mean, it's written in the Bible that Jesus took away spirits all over the place. In the East, the phenomena of spirits is well versed. It's in the West that we're actually reawakening to the fact. Now, an imposing energy is an energy that enters through your auric field and becomes an impost in your energetic field, which has an influence over your natural way of being, your natural selection, and in truth, your belief systems and consciousness. So we've got to be careful with what we attract into our energetic field, because in the end, we may be robbed of our true free will.
So these, they enter through auric fields, and they're actually then playing on weaknesses that exist within you. That's an attractor, is it?
The most attracting quality of an imposing energy is emotional conditions, particularly the out-of-control ones. They attach themselves to the energy field simply because they're attracted to the emotional rush. Emotional energy is a very powerful form of centralized prana, and that becomes quite an attractive tool or focus for a disembodied being. They themselves are emotionally disturbed, so they're looking for other emotional disturbances which attract them under the law of attraction and magnetic pull. I don't want to make this a little bit too out there for the listeners, but we can reduce this, and it's not a matter of understanding or being afraid of it. It's just about understanding. You only have to ask a child and they will tell you that there's always energies hovering around, and we've all experienced that as a child ourselves.
Yes, and I have to say one of the probably biggest eye-openers I had was This is quite a while back, I'm sure over a year ago, you offered a workshop on a Sunday afternoon about imposing energies. And I sort of, you know, put on my sunglasses and a big hat and thought I'd go along and have a listen. And I got there, and that day there was easily 150 people in the room, maybe 200, some of them who I would have classified as quite straight people. And they, we were all there because we all knew it existed and we wanted to actually know more about it. So that was a huge eye-opener for me. You know, it allowed me to take off my sunnies and my hat and face this fact of life as I know it. Now, is this something that, so you're saying it's always been this way. Does there seem to be a thinning of the veil or something that's creating more opportunity or this occurring more now, or is it just sort of like it's always been?
There's more opportunity now because we don't get put in jail or into a straitjacket when we talk about these things. Uh-huh. And more people are finding that they're at the liberty of speaking about them. A lot of professionals are also talking about them more and more. As far as I know, they are doing so privately and between themselves and whom they find confidence with, and not necessarily going back to their own associations and the universities and talking about them, but they are talking about them, which is a wonderful thing. And in the end, we've got to really put our heads together and work together on this, because if you're doing alcohol and drugs, you are being invaded by these imposing energies, which then play on your emotions, and it's they who insist that you continue the habit because they enjoy the energy that you provide for them through your human frame. Mm. And I have never come across anyone who's doing drugs or alcohol who are not open to the fact of entities, because they can experience them. And if we can say that that's an altered brainwave and they're just being an under illusion, then we're really calling these people liars, because they have full experience of what goes on under those circumstances.
So drugs and alcohol weaken the auric field, your natural protector, or they create holes in the auric field.
The easiest way for an imposing energy to enter your auric field is through drugs and alcohol, bar none.
Yep, right.
And I'm not being judgmental on anyone doing that. I understand that a lot of people survive and need this and have no other hope, and for them it's a very real condition. But that's the fact. Energetically speaking, if you open up your auric field under emotional circumstances, you will get imposed upon.
I'm talking with Serge Ben-Hayon. You're tuned to Bay FM. We're going to hear another track off of Chris James' CD, Silk in the Clouds. I'm Gail Q, visiting with Serge Ben-Hayon this morning about the nature of esoteric healing. Serge has a clinic in Ganelaba, and if you want more information about universal medicine, you can check the website, www.universalmedicine.com.au. Serge, I'd like to now take the interview to a discussion around illness and disease, because unfortunately this is something that many people are dealing with. And I really appreciated your comments earlier about that your work always begins from the still point within and working up the layers towards that. Some comments, some information, please, on working with illness and disease.
First and foremost, that's what our clinic does and has been doing for 6 years now. And we get clients from all over the Eastern Seaboard and also from Perth and Adelaide and from overseas visiting the clinic with lots and lots of difficult conditions. Secondly, our clinic and myself particularly are very, very pro-medicine. I love the work of doctors. I love the work particularly of surgeons in incorporating in all facets of healing, as well as the many different modalities that are practiced out there. In terms of dealing with illness and disease, we really need to be starting to make some drastic changes. The key in drastic changing is to not improve the current system that we've got now, because we've tried that and it doesn't work. We've got to go back and find out what it is about the human being and about the human frame, what it is about the physiology of the human brain, what it is the energetic quality of the human frame and the energetic light within it that is causing the high rise in illness and disease. For example, in the UK, where I practice and teach twice a year, cancer is 1 in 4. In New Zealand, when I was there last on the radio, I heard it was 1 in 3. Now, we're getting a little bit too numb with these numbers, and if you want to know what 1 in 4 or 1 in 3 really feels like, it's just a process of holding hands with 4 people, close your eyes, connect to everybody that's in there by feeling them, and then get one person to let go of that ring, and you'll see what it really is like to have a number 1 in 4 or 1 in 3. Cancer itself, which is on the rise, is a very spiritual condition, and it's a spiritual disease. So, for example, if a lady comes in with breast cancer, we get her to understand why she has the breast cancer, which, according to esoteric healing, is the lack of self-nurturing. The breasts are the nurturing centers. So if the minute you get a lump or any condition there that is abnormal, it's already an indicator that you're not nurturing yourself. So if somebody comes in with a lump or is due to have an operation, we ask them to go ahead, of course, by all means, with the operation if that's their choice, but to begin changing the energetic predisposition that led to that illness and disease in the first place. So in the breast cancer situation, we offer the lady or the woman conditions upon which they can resource the way in which they self-nurture. There are many ways in which you can attract illness and disease, and there are many ways in which you can reassess them as well.
And cancer just is rampant nowadays, so I'm sure there'll be lots of people interested in that information. I mean, lots of other diseases abound as well. And are they always at the root an emotional issue?
All disease and illness has an emotional root cause, bar none. And that's an important point that we must all take into consideration. If the health professionals aren't looking at it from that angle, then we need to take our own responsibility and begin to look at it from that angle. If the sun was the cause of skin cancer, many, many more people would have skin cancer than they already do. The sun is a great contributor towards skin cancer, but only when there is a point of predisposition in the emotional body that then arises that condition we call sun cancer. So, for example, there's also heart disease, and there's also arthritis, and there's also endometriosis, and there's also...
And on and on.
The key is to go back into self-love. The greatest thing that's missing in mankind is self-love. And if we don't self-love, we are unable to accept that we are a living stillness and that we have gentleness in our body. It's surprising how many people actually reject gentleness when it's presented to them in the most simplest form. And through meditation, we get to understand our gentleness, but it's surprising how many people won't allow gentleness in, which is actually an indicator of how much lack of self-love there is in our lives.
So for people who are not yet experiencing an illness or a disease, the predisposition is probably inherent just in the state of where we're living and the pace we're living nowadays. So to undertake treatment or healing, such as on offer through an energetic connection to our own stillness and our own healer within, is a preventative measure to not end up in that situation, because there's plenty of work to be done before the illness actually manifests, I assume.
That's correct, and post-illness as well. So the key is to get to know yourself through the livingness of that gentleness or the livingness of that stillness. Best way to do that is obviously to attend one of the workshops that we rerun. I'm not trying to self-promote here, but we believe we've got a very, very good package in delivering that livingness of gentleness and stillness. And people can get to know themselves through that. And then what they will do is they find that they don't have to associate with all the things that they do as who they are, and they can let go of this human chasing of acceptance and recognition, which only comes through other people. So instead of making everybody happy or pleasing everybody so that we can have a gesture shown towards us that indicates a little level of self-love, we can have a lot of self-love by knowing who we are within and understanding that from a place of stillness and gentleness. That way we don't have to rely on anyone. Once we don't rely on anyone with love, we can come across with a greater source of energetic integrity, love within, and then inspire others to be the same.
It's been wonderful having you here this morning, Serge. I think we're going to have to head towards the end of this interview. I'd like to maybe close with your New Year's gift that you gave us, which was the catchy little phrase of observing, not absorbing. Do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, we have a little provocative riddle that we give out at the workshop and workshops, and that is that life is about living like a fish in the sea without getting wet. What it really means is the key is to observe life and not absorb it. Because the minute you absorb life, you are living everybody else's condition inside your own human frame. And the key is to observe it and respond, but to respond and live so from your own gentleness within, not anybody else's ungentleness.
You're an inspiration. Thank you so much for coming in this morning. I've been speaking with Serge Benhayon. He's the founder and director of Universal Medicine. The essence of the work that flows through Serge is in line with that which can be called sacred and esoteric by nature. It is non-traditional, following no allegiance to any cult, form, or belief other than that which is found intuitively at the heart's center, in accordance with the spirit of the hierarchy. No claims are made other than the stance that the work, like all other before us, should always be ascertained by the individual to be the work of truth or not. Serge is known as the healer's healer, and he communicates sacred teachings through esoteric healing. If you'd like more information, you can go to www.universalmedicine.com.au. For those of you who don't have access to the internet, the phone number to the clinic is 6624-3706.